Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Tom Wheeler, Executive Director of EPIC, the Environmental Protection Information Center. And I'm joined by my friend and colleague, Caroline Griffith, Executive Director of the North Coast Environmental Center. Hey, Caroline.
Hi, Tom.
Matt Simmons, Staff Attorney at EPIC. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Tom.
Colin Fisk, Executive Director of the Coalition for Responsible Transportation Priorities. Hey, Colin.
Hello.
And we are also joined by the editor of the Lost Coast Outpost, our most esteemed local newspaper. What do you call yourself?
It's a website. You just call it a website.
Is it a blog? I feel like blogs are still 2005.
Media outlet.
That's good. People say blog as a term of disparagement, but I don't much care. It's fine. You can call it a blog.
I media empire because this radio show also appears on the Lost Coast Media Empire as well. You may be listening to this on K-Hum. Thank you, K-Hum, for hosting the Eco News Report. All right. So this is Hank Sims.
Hi, Tom.
I am really a radio professional, everybody, as you can tell. All right. So we are talking about the election results. It is Wednesday the 16th. We will presumably get another ballot drop this Friday and find out more information about local races. So the information that you're hearing now may be outdated. And so apologies. This is as best we understand at 10:07 on Wednesday morning. What local races, Caroline, were you really particularly watching this election?
I think one of the biggest ones was for the clerk, recorder, and registrar of voters, which I think people are kind of shocked that that was like one of our hot ticket races this time around. And as an election nerd, I'm very interested in who's going to be administering our elections, but especially with all the election denialism happening. And right now, it looks like with the latest drop that Juan Pablo Cervantes is leading in that race over Tiffany Hunt Nielsen. And Juan Pablo has worked in the elections office for years. It's kind of a fixture there. And as somebody, I worked on the campaign for ranked choice voting in Eureka, and having talked with Juan a lot about that, it's exciting to have the prospect of somebody in our elections office who also just really, really loves elections and all the different ways to administer elections and really takes it seriously.
Juan is a wonderful elections nerd. He really enjoys having increased voter turnout and geeking out on ways that he can make sure that we expand the ballot. So exciting times. Juan was also seen as the more progressive of the two candidates. Tiffany Hunt Nielsen comes from kind of a humble realtor's real estate background and drew a lot of support from the more conservative establishment of Humboldt County politics. Although this is technically a nonpartisan race, as I think just about everything in Humboldt County is a nonpartisan race. So Juan is in the lead. So Hank, in your experience in kind of looking at the last couple of elections, I think that we are seeing changing voting patterns and changing universal vote by mail, which we now have in California, has kind of shifted the election, where it used to be conservatives may have voted early, have gotten those ballots in by vote by mail, and then you would tend to see kind of a liberal bump for late breaking ballots. Do you have any predictions on how remaining ballots might tend, liberal or conservative?
Yeah, I think that we only have one data point to go by after the pandemic, or you know, there are the 2000 elections too, where it was kind of where things were still sort of in flux. But now I think you're right that the pandemic and universal vote by mail has changed voting patterns somewhat. But what we've seen so far is that still these last counted votes tend to be more blue, as they say, than the vote as a whole. So I think Juan Pablo Cervantes has about 53% of the vote right now. So I think he's in a pretty safe place as the remaining votes counted.
So the chance for a conservative pickup of a seat here in Humboldt County is going to be within Eureka, where John Fullerton currently has a small lead over liberal Mario Fernandez. Caroline, do you have any thoughts on that race as somebody who lives in Eureka?
Yeah, you know, it is. This one's really interesting. And I think that it will be, as Hank said, we don't have a lot of data points for how we really predict a lot of these. But I do know that as folks that I know were out canvassing for different campaigns right before the election, the weekend before, there were a lot of people who hadn't voted yet. So there's still all of these ballots coming in. And if you look at the most recent report from the elections office, it's a pretty small number of ballots that have been counted in that race. I mean, the difference right now, Fullerton is ahead, I think, just by a couple of dozen. But it really is just it's a pretty small percentage of actual voters there that have been counted yet. So it'll be interesting to see with this next report on Friday. Like you said, Tom, this might be outdated by the time folks are hearing it and could be a different situation because it's really hard to say. And this was a big one. I think, you know, this is the third time that John Fullerton has run for city council. I think someone can correct me here if I'm wrong. He's definitely run before and never won.
And he poured a lot of money into this campaign. It was an aggressive campaign by Fullerton. And I don't want to talk too much smack, but I think that Mario had other stuff going on in his life and didn't run as strong of a campaign. And I think that we're seeing the fruits of that kind of disparity, both in spending and get out the vote effort by the two sides. So it's going to be a bit of a nail biter. Before this show, I did some math looking at previous turnout in this ward. It is a ward that typically votes pretty well. I think in the 2018 election, we had something like 76% turnout of registered voters, which is high for elections here in Humboldt County. So if we see a large turnout and if Mario starts to improve on his returns, currently he's only winning 51-49 in vote-by-mail ballots. If we assume that the majority of these ballots left are vote-by-mail, he can pull it out, but it's gonna be tight. Matt, I know that you are an Arcata resident. You spend way too much time going to things like the Planning Commission, and we had an open race in Arcata for two city council seats, one of which was, we had two incumbents on the ballot. We had Brett Watson and Meredith Matthews. How is it looking in Arcata?
So Meredith Matthews, well, I guess she wasn't elected the first time. She was appointed. So she won her first election for city council, and Brett Watson lost his reelection and is going to be replaced by Kimberly White, planning commissioner and member of CUNYA, which is really great because she brings representation to Valley West and her experience from the Planning Commission. And so I think for folks who have been watching Brett Watson's saga, well, I won't say, but he won't be on the city council anymore.
I mean, had he been elected, it would have been some really great fodder for the Lost Coast Outpost. Hank, do you want to give a brief rundown of Delilah Goldie Goldstein and your reporting on this race?
Well, I will just say that there were a great number of sort of sock puppet accounts that made a splash in the world in the days leading up to the Arcata election. And that one thing that they all had in common, they're young women who shared names of people currently associated with Arcata City Hall, and that they were all very much in support of Brett Watson, strangely. It's a little strange and a little sad, maybe. But yeah, if that was a campaign, it seems to have failed, I guess I can say.
Something else I can say about the Arcata race is the controversial things going on in Arcata right now is the Gateway Area Plan. This plan to upzone areas around just north of Samoa Boulevard and the Creamery District. And I think a lot of the opponents of the Gateway Plan had vowed to make this election sort of
A referendum on the gateway,
and we just didn't see that at all, right? Meredith Matthews has been strongly in favor of it and won her election handily, and the other candidates in the race who had come out vehemently against the Gateway Plan didn't do so well. And so I think it's a strong sign that there's support for that plan in the community.
Colin, how does this affect the votes going forward for Gateway? If this is kind of one of the big things in your town, also Arcata, how are you anticipating this election might change, or will it change, the final disposition of the Gateway Plan?
That's an interesting question. I'm not sure that we really know. The votes on the Gateway at the City Council are such that two of the five council members have had to recuse themselves. So there's only three members who can vote on the gateway, and two of those seats were up for election. So I don't think we necessarily know the answer to that, but it may not have changed the dynamics on the council in terms of the gateway vote very much, but that remains to be seen. I also wanted to just highlight something that Matt mentioned in passing, which is, maybe someone can fact check me on this, but I think that Kimberly White is the first elected council member from the Valley West neighborhood in Arcata. And so that's kind of a historic change in Arcata.
Which is fantastic. I mean, Valley West has, in my view, kind of been the dumping ground for Arcata. It's the area where the chain stores were allowed to be established and fast food places and whatnot. And so it's good to get more representation for that neighborhood on the council. One other race I want to highlight is Humboldt Community Services District, which is kind of perhaps one that may not have been on many people's minds this election, but we had a shakeup there. Caroline, do you want to report on that race?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's one that, you know, the community services districts, a lot of people forget about them, but they actually do have a lot of control over land use issues. And so the Humboldt Community Services District for a while has had very little turnover on its board of directors. There's been a lot of folks who've been on there for a long time, many connections with developers, land developers. One of those folks who's been on there for a while is Alan Bongio, who I think that folks would recognize the name from his scandal on the Planning Commission. He's also Humboldt County Planning Commissioner. There's been some issues with his conduct there, the things that he has said in regards to local tribes, and also just the pretty blatant appearance of impropriety and working alongside those folks that they're supposed to be regulating as planning commissioners. So he is also in the Humboldt Community Services District, and it appears that he has been unseated. We had somebody, a local resident, Julie Ryan, who works for, she's a lot of folks would know her as Julie Unruly. She was a DJ on KHSU for a long time, been in the community a long time in the punk rock scene, working with Food Not Bombs and groups like that. She now works for Food for People and has an environmental planning background. And just as a citizen who is a ratepayer in the Humboldt Community Services District, decided to throw her hat in the ring, and looks like she is on board to take a seat in that race.
All right. So now I know of at least two former punks, or I'm not sure if they would call themselves former punks, who are in elected office. We have, of course, Mike Wilson, who was in a number of bands, punk bands once upon a time, whose names I will never remember. Sorry, Mike. And Julie. So an exciting time for punks, I suppose.
Well, you know, and I think that we kind of forget that that is also an era, right? These are folks from Gen X who now, like, the youth would see as being old people. They, like, are the establishment. So it's time for them to take that place.
Old person, yeah. Hank Sims, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I guess I would say punk didn't die. It just took over the government, right?
Yeah, right. All right, let's expand our borders a little bit and talk about statewide stuff. I think all of the statewide races were pretty unsurprising. The Democratic candidate won for all major statewide races. We don't see anything kind of interesting in other local races. Congressman Huffman is cruising to re-election, as is Senator McGuire, as is Assemblymember Wood. So no surprises there. I think the ballot initiatives this year were interesting. Does anybody have a favorite ballot initiative that they want to talk about and break down for us? If not, I'll get started on Prop 30.
My favorite, as somebody who is capable of getting pregnant, I was pretty stoked to see Californians, and unsurprisingly, turn out to codify reproductive rights in the Constitution.
Yeah, and let's look at the national stage briefly. We had reproductive rights on the ballot in a number of states, either in protecting the right to an abortion or other ballot initiatives in more conservative states that were attempting to enshrine the right to life, so to speak, of the unborn fetus within their laws. And I think almost universally, if I'm not mistaken, the pro-choice crowd won the day, even in more conservative states. So if we look back to the Kansas special election that kind of shocked the world, shocked the country a couple months ago, that wasn't an aberration. The effects of Roe v. Wade are still being felt in politics, and I think largely saved the Democrats in many races and gave them a platform to run on against their conservative rivals.
Although I will say, Tom, and something that I think is interesting, and I won't try to speculate on why this is, that in a lot of those same areas that voted essentially pro-choice, voted for candidates who are anti-choice. So maybe there's some insight there into the American electorate, but I'm not expert enough to see it.
Sure, sure. Eco News. We are talking about the election results and what they might mean for environmental issues here in Humboldt County and in our country. All right, so other propositions, Prop 30, which would have taxed the mega rich to fund things like EV charging stations, electric vehicle charging stations, wildfire response in the state, went down kind of surprisingly. This seems like a wonderful combination of facts for success in California, right? Let's stick it to the rich. Let's do cool stuff like fund EV chargers, but it lost. And I think a large part of the reason that lost was that Governor Newsom, our Democratic governor, came out against it with a very progressive frame for opposing taxes on the mega rich. Matt, do you want to talk about that?
I don't know. I'm trying to redefine the word progressive in my head to have it match what Newsom was doing there.
It wasn't, but yeah. I mean, his talking point was that, look, this initiative got a ton of money by Lyft, the car sharing service, because under California law, Lyft and Uber and other car sharing services need to have 100% EVs by 2030. So 5 years ahead of the rest of the state, where we have, you know, a statewide mandate for all new car purchases to be electric by 2035. And these car sharing companies are nervous because there's frankly not the infrastructure there yet. And so they invested a lot of money to try to get infrastructure so that their business would not be negatively impacted. And Governor Newsom took the spin that this was large, wealthy capitalists, blah, that came to try to buy an initiative.
That might have worked better if the people on the other side weren't the large, wealthy people who would have been getting taxed to pay for all this, right? This wasn't a tax on Lyft users, right? It was a tax on millionaires, like the absurdly wealthy, to pay for this. Large, basically, that was who lined up against it, was large financial interests and Governor Newsom, which I think reveals something about where his loyalties lie, if he's willing to buck the rest of the Democratic Party to fight them on this.
And longtime listeners of this show will know that I really dislike Governor Newsom, and I think that he's a fraud and a fake environmentalist. Quote me on that, Governor Newsom. I hope you run for president, and I hope you lose badly. Caroline?
Well, I just think it's really interesting that like the whole the Lyft funded this, Lyft is bad thing worked this time around, when that was really the argument against, you know, in 2020, Lyft and Uber funded a ballot measure to codify gig workers and the gig economy, which was something that has been arguably not good for workers and was very much opposed. And one of the big things that people, the opposition to it, was saying, oh, this is funded by these mega corporations, right? And so it's just interesting how that argument worked this time, but didn't work then. And I think it kind of shows that the big operative force in this is also the ultra rich who are being taxed. Though I would say an added layer to this is that there was not agreement on the left about this. And there were definitely some unions who I know a lot of folks go to for endorsements for ballot measures, different unions who were opposed to this as well. And it seemed like their argument was really, yes, let's tax the ultra rich, but let's not
dedicate that line item just for
what that goes for. Right. Let's if we're going to tax the uber rich, let's make sure that we're distributing the benefits to more folks.
I'll also
hopefully
just
this
say,
comes back and we just keep every year we have some sort of like tax the rich initiative till it wins.
I'll also just say that despite California's liberal reputation, we actually have been very against taxes in a lot of our propositions over the years. I mean, the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association is pretty good at getting people to vote against taxes on people richer than them. I mean, just 2 years ago, we had the like partial repeal of Prop 13, which would have taxed like commercial properties over, I think it was like $2 or $3 million in value. And we got commercials about how this would hurt like small farmers and et cetera. And like, as someone who's in favor of taxes and thinks that we should have taxes that pay for welfare and other things and EVs and all the good things, it's a little bit disappointing when the California electorate doesn't like them.
I will also give my hot take that I think that California's proposition system is entirely stupid. It is just a way for people who have a boatload of money to get something that that they like onto the ballot, and then people who are not educated on the subject matter get to like weigh in based on like the commercials that dominate in their area. It doesn't seem like this is like the way that good laws or good governance works to me. But that's like an anti-democratic take, I guess. So call me a fascist.
Yeah, it's that, or every 2 years we keep fighting about a dialysis proposition.
Like, which also lost, right? So dialysis went down. We also saw internet gambling on sports go down. Other kind of common denominators between the propositions that lost were that voters saw that there was some sort of a rich funder who will be interested in the outcome, putting this on the ballot and rejecting that. Colin.
I'm not so sure personally that was the common denominator for Prop 30, at least, because I think when you looked at the polling, it looked like it was very popular until Newsom, you know, came out against it and it dropped substantially. And I guess my interpretation is not so much that it was his message as it was the messenger. And also to Caroline's point about some division among unions and other progressive blocks, that although Newsom may be unpopular among some of us, he is quite popular with the Democratic base in California and is viewed apparently as a credible messenger on these kind of issues. And so I think that it may have been more who was saying it than what was being said about Prop 30. And I guess I'll just comment as a former Florida resident, you know, lived in a state where the only way that anything progressive happened was through citizen referendum or ballot measures. I have a somewhat different take on that process, but I do see your point.
Well,
on the local level, on the microcosmic level, the ballot initiatives are much more democratic than at the state level, I think, because that's where the massive amounts of money get involved.
And actually, back to the local level, I know nothing about things like Ferndale City Council or Fortuna City Council. Hank, do you have any reads on those races, or are they also inscrutable to you?
They're a little bit inscrutable to me. I'm, you know, ashamed to say that, you know, we don't have the, as a news organization, the time and resources to do absolutely everything that we'd like to do. But I was kind of taken, since most of you, I think, either work or live in Arcata, I was kind of taken by the result of the Earth Flag proposition. Arcata, of all towns in the world, voted down an effort to put the Earth Flag at the top of the flagpole. Why is that? I don't know. You spend more time in Arcata than I do. Tell me.
That was a strange one. Well, we had the local chair of the Green Party come out in opposition. I imagine that he was a veteran and took offense at any flag flying higher than the U.S. flag. So I think that this also speaks to voters' natural instincts on propositions, which is to vote no. I think that all things being equal, no votes just will happen if you're confused or if you don't really have a strong belief. Maybe that's what it's about. I don't know. I think that Eureka is going to quickly overtake Arcata as the most liberal jurisdiction in Humboldt County. That's my prediction. So maybe this is just a foreshadowing what is to come in Arcata.
I'll offer my anecdotal take on that, which is that a lot of the sort of stalwart progressives saw it as a non-issue because it was symbolic and not, you know, not impactful, and perhaps didn't vote on it or voted no just out of spite. And I also think that the opposition planted the seeds of doubt about the legality and, you know, legal fights, and those can be very effective with propositions, I think.
But what a weird thing to be voting on. Again, I think propositions are kind of dumb. Let's just have more things be decided by our legislatures and whatever. I'll stop with my hot take. We are getting near the end of the show and we haven't even touched the collapse of the red wave that everyone told us was coming. We saw the Democrats significantly overperform expectations. It is looking like, or maybe it is determined, that we, the Democratic Party, is going to hold control of the Senate and might even pick up a seat in the Senate. It is projected the Democrats are going to lose the House, although only just narrowly. What does this mean for the state of the national conversation on environmental issues, since this is an environmental podcast, purportedly? Colin, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, presumably it means that nothing will happen in Congress for the next 2 years. Any action will be at the executive level.
This is related to that. The people who actually make our laws aren't legislators anymore. They're judges. And with a 50 or 51 seat Senate majority, it will be considerably easier to get sane judges put on the bench who will rule better on environmental cases. And so for me as a lawyer, like, I'm very happy that the Senate didn't flip to Republican. It might even pick up a seat, because it just, the idea of another 2 years of slow judges being appointed or no judges being appointed, or a Supreme Court seat if it comes up, right? Like, the Senate is now become so incredibly important just because they appoint the people who actually make all of our decisions. So, yeah.
I think this also means that the Inflation Reduction Act and the massive investment that that act provided into renewable energy and other climate solutions is safe. That was one of the things that the Republicans had campaigned on. You know, this is the new Obamacare. Elect us and we'll gut the IRA. And
there was no backlash. People are happy that we spent tons of money on things. It's kind of nice.
Well, to that point, since this is an environmental podcast talking about politics, I think it's interesting to me, and I'm certainly no expert in this, but, you know, looking at this sort of issue polling at a national level, all of the pundits and talk was about inflation and abortion rights, which certainly were top of mind for a lot of people. But number two, number three, number four issue for a lot of voters was climate. And that was not something that sort of seemed to enter the mainstream political conversation, but maybe speaks to some of what you're, you know, the lack of ability to get traction on being anti-Inflation Reduction Act.
Caroline or Hank, as folks who have young people in your lives, any reflections about the importance of the youth vote in this election?
I'm not less interested in the results of the election and more interested in the cause, but I really am in the reason why there was not the red wave. I think that that's super important, and that there was such a large youth turnout. And I think a big portion of that was because of these existential things like climate change and like reproductive rights. I was just reading an article in Teen Vogue. I'm sure all of you read Teen Vogue. They're actually like super duper smart. And I think that, and very political. And I think that the young folk who are reading it, like, get that, yes, there are things that are broken in our system, but also a way that we can work towards fixing it is by participating. Or at the very least, if you're participating, you get a front row seat to the brokenness, and it can motivate you to do even more work. And so I think that that is hugely important. And I'm hopeful that the young people who did participate for this first time and elected we now have a 25-year-old, maybe like the second 25-year-old to sit in the House of Representatives in decades. We now have young people doing it, that they won't watch what's happening and see nothing happen and say, I'm not going to do it again next time.
The kids are all right, as they say.
They are.
All right. Well, let's leave on that cheerful note. Many thanks to all my guests today. We will, I'm sure, get something wrong, because as we said at the beginning of the show, it is Wednesday, November 16th, as we are recording, and more votes continue to be counted as we speak. So things may change, and I hope we didn't get anything too wrong. If we did, I'm sure you'll hear about it on the next issue of the Eco News. Well, ciao.
All right. Nice seeing you all.
Thanks, everyone. And speaking of which, join us again on this time and channel next week for more environmental news from the North Coast of California.